reasons for inviting me. It's a standard opening remark.
Zonoids.
So, I will first of all show you the familiar Fridjon theorem. Which everybody knows well. So, this is the standard Fridjon theorem. Then it has a consequence, a corollary. This was discovered by Boll, Geiss, and Pelczynski-Sharek, and rediscovered by us, that is Meyer and Pajor and myself, sometime later, and where we used it a little bit more. So, you see, you have a convex body, BE, the unit ball of a Banach space, and then there is a parallel biped that contains it, and the volume of the parallel biped is almost like the volume of the cube. I'm assuming that, of course, that BN2 is the maximal ellipsoid. So it's almost the same. And there is a cross polytope, which has almost the same volume as the cross polytope contained in BN2. So this follows immediately from the Fridjon theorem above. And the proof is very short. You look at the determinant of the identity there, and you use the Cauchy-Binet formula, which is this one.
Can you put your notation? BE is the unit ball of the norm space
E? Yes. Yes. You put maximal ellipsoid inside, and then there is a parallel biped, which is almost the cube, and another one. So you look at the determinant of the identity, this is one, and then you use Cauchy-Binet formula. And then you use the obvious inequality. You use the obvious inequality. You simply take the maximum of the determinant of xi outside, and then you are left inside with all subsets of the products of n lambda i's. And then you simply ask, when is this maximal? Well, it's maximal. You know that sigma lambda I is equal to n. And so it's maximal when all of them are equal. And so when all of them are equal, that's what you get. When all of them are equal.
Something normalized on something.
No, there is nothing. Sigma lambda I is equal to n. And you ask, when is such a product, when is such the sum maximal?
Volume of your body equal to volume of Euclidean ball, no?
The maximal ellipsoid is BN2 inside BE. That's the only condition. And so you take the maximal determinant outside.
Up to now, the body does not appear.
Maximal volume up there.
He did not write
up there.
Where is
in the theorem of Fridjon?
This is the statement of the corollary.
No, of course.
Some people put the statements in the
No, okay, so look at the statement right. And then look at the corollary right. Of that statement, yes. Right. Right. Okay.
So under the assumptions here is the body.
There is a parallel pipette outside P.
Under the assumptions of
and there is a
the following statement follows.
And there is a cross polytope.
Serum does not have assumption because it's
this is cross polytope.
All of us we know Fred Jones theorem. So this is yes. Assumption if maximum volume is inside corollary. And I don't see maximum volume inside corollary.
It is a continuation of the theorem above. The assumptions are continued.
Okay, I don't understand.
Assuming that the maximum volume ellipsoid is the usual unit ball, you have this input.
Yes. Okay. Yes, and so this is a simple result. The product of the lambda is this, say, sigma is bounded, is maximal when all of them are equal. All of them, but it's, the sum is up from 1 up to m, and therefore, to be all equal, it means that there are n over m, and so you get that. And then this factor that appears here, m over n, n over m to the power n, is bounded by e to the power n. That's easy. And, of course, if you look at the maximal determinant, it is attained for some I naught of n points. And now I define P. P is the set of all x such that the inner product with xi is bounded by 1 for every I in I naught. But these are functionals. Xi are functionals of norm 1. And so P contains, of course, the unit ball, BE. P contains BE. And what is the volume of such a parallel pipette? This is it. The determinant. And then you just plug it in. And you get the result. That's all. For P. So you apply this e to the power n, you apply this formula for P, and you get the result that the volume of P is bounded by square root 2e. And the proof for the cross polytope C is similar. It's immediately, it's the same thing. So that's it. So, an obvious corollary is the following. This was also discovered by Boll, Geis, and Pelczynski-Sharik. So I'll put the whole corollary. And I define volume ratios. Well, volume ratio, we all know, it's ellipsoidal volume ratio. It's denoted by VR of E. And what is external volume ratio? External volume ratio is also defined here. You look at the parallel pipette of minimal volume that contains BE. That's external volume ratio. Then the corollary says that the product of the two, the external volume ratio, remember that BN2 is the maximal ellipsoid inside BE. And so when you multiply them, of course BE disappears. Because BE appears here below, and in the volume ratio, BE appears above, and so they disappear. And so this is stated that it says that the maximal parallel piped volume divided by the volume of the BN2, which is inside B of E, is constant it's constant in N. So you see it's like root N, always. This is an immediate corollary. So I define now what is a zonotope. It is the sum of segments, the standard definition. And more generally, a zonoid is the linear map, is what is obtained by using a linear map on L infinity. And the image of the L infinity ball is called the zonoid. And the volume of Z, the volume of Z here is, it is well known that this is equal to that. It's a standard, it's a well-known formula for volumes. Now I define what is called, the L infinity factorization constant. Sometimes if you take F to be equal to E, this is exactly the projection constant of a Banach space E, when F is equal to E. What you do is if you take T to be the identity and F to be equal to E, this is the projection constant. So what you do is you have a map from E to F, and you want to factor it through L infinity in the best possible way, with the infimum being that. The infimum over the product of the two norms. This is standardly known as gamma infinity T. And the projection constant, of course, is gamma infinity of the identity for a finite dimensional Banach space. So the result is the following. If EF are n-dimensional Banach spaces and T is a linear map, then there is a zonoid inside BF denoted by Z and a parallel piped P, this is the red square, which contains B of E, so that the gamma infinity norm of T of any linear map from E to F is bounded from below by the determinant of T to the power 1 over N multiplied by the ratio of the minimal parallel piped P that contains BF, that is contained in BE, that contains BE, and the zonoid, the maximal zonoid inside B of F. So it gives you a bound for the projection constant, of course. This is the theorem. So the bound for the projection constant of a finite dimensional Banach space is the ratio between P and Z, the volumes of P and Z.
These volumes are lower.
It's a lower bound. It is a lower bound. I mean, This is the lower bound.
Somehow I understand this is upper bound for ratio of these two things, but you need to find P and to find Z.
Yes,
yes. From this point of view, when you have any P and any Z, you never know if it...
But you have an immediate bound. But you have an immediate bound from below. For example, if you take a P, if you take E to be ln 2, if you take E to be ln 2, you get equality. If you get equality, lambda E is bounded by square root M from below. So there are, it can be used in many applications. So I want to prove this. The proof is also one page, more or less. Okay. So, but I want to prove not that, I want to prove the previous theorem, the theorem there. So, what this applies is to that, to that, to the theorem. So, for every epsilon, we find a factorization like that, UV, to L infinity, which is very close to gamma infinity. Because they are finite dimensional, you can assume M is finite. Up to 1 plus epsilon, it's very close. You can assume the norm of U is 1, and the norm of V is almost gamma infinity. Then I define what is Z. Z is V. It is the image of the L infinity ball, and you normalize V by its operator norm. This is Z. Of course, Z is contained in B of F. Z is contained in B of F. Because the norm, because this is a norm 1 operator. V over the norm of V is a norm 1 operator. Yeah, I mean, don't look at the picture. Look at there. The picture there. Or whatever it is. Z is contained in B of F. Of course, because V has norm 1. So. Then, if you look at U star, this is a map from LM1 to E star. And it can be written in that way. And then I let V of EI be equal to YI. So I have that VU, the operator T, is exactly this operator in tensor form. So, and then I use Cauchy-Binet again. I look at the determinant of T. T is the product of two matrices. M by N matrices, V and U. The determinant of T is by Cauchy-Binet equal to the product, taken over all subsets of the integers from 1 to m. Then I do the usual thing. I take the maximum determinant xi star outside and leave the rest in with absolute value. So I get an inequality. And this maximum is attained, we can assume, for some I naught of n points. Now recall that if P is that, a parallel biped, then P contains B of E, because xi star have norm 1, because U has norm 1. Xi star is U star EI, so they have norm 1, so they are in E star, in the unit ball of E star, so P contains B of E. And the previous formula I showed you says that the determinant of xi star in I naught is 2 to the power n divided by p, the volume of p. And that sum is the zonoid. Is the volume of the zonoid. V of BM infinity, but you have to multiply by 2 to the minus n. And this is exactly 2 minus n multiplied by z multiplied by the norm of v to the power 1 over n. That's the definition of b v of z and v b m infinity. So we have that, and that's the end of the proof. Combining this, you get this is the end. Of the theorem. To define various volume ratios, other volume ratios.
What about the other side inequality? Is there a chance for it? Or?
It's a good question, but there is a chance for it if one of the spaces is L2, but I will come back to that later.
There is a chance that nothing...
Well, I mean, from E to A... I think for if E is L2, then actually you can get the quality.
Here, of course. Not in that.
No. I mean, in the main theorem, then you get the quality. So you can define volume ratios in a more general sense. You have an infinite dimensional. A ball of LP, and you map it into Rn by some map. You map LP into space E, taking care that the ball is mapped inside the unit ball of E. So, for example, the standard volume ratio. So it's defined here. What it is. It is the volume of B of E to the power 1 over N divided by T of BLP, the infimum over all such. So you want to maximize the volume of that inside B of E. Then the standard volume ratio is, of course, when you take P to equal to 2. And the zonoid ratio is when you take P equal to infinity. And when you take P equal to 1, this is always equal to 1. Because every n-dimensional is a quotient of L1. So, if I reformulate the last theorem in this new notation, I get that for every T from a Banach space E to a Banach space F, the external volume ratio of E multiplied by the volume ratio, the zonoid ratio, VR, FL infinity is the zonoid ratio, multiplied by the determinant of T to the power 1 over N is smaller than BF divided by BE to the power 1 over N, gamma infinity of T. This is just a reformulation. What I did is simply multiplied, in the previous theorem, You have the external volume ratio, so you have B of E below. You have P divided by B of E, and here it appears below. And when you take the volume ratio, you have B of F above. And so it appears here. So that's multiplication, simply. What can we say about the zonoid ratio? This is VRFL infinity. So I'm saying that generally this is very small because there are lots of zonoids. So you can always get close. You think you can always get close because there are lots of zonoids. But we know that in examples that zonoid ratio can be large. But we cannot construct such spaces. There is no way to know how large... there is no construction of a big zonoid ratio. So, but we can prove the following. So it says that for every n-dimensional Banach space, the zonoid ratio of F multiplied by the zonoid ratio of F star is always bounded by the GL2 constant of F. I will explain what it is in a minute. And this is bounded by the local unconditional structure of F. And this is bounded by the unconditional basis constant of F, which is bounded by the distance, which is bounded by square root n for every n-dimensional space. So I need to explain what is GL2 of F. GL2 of F is you take all maps T, linear maps T, from F to L2, and you look at the soup of gamma 1 T divided by pi 1 of T. So this is something. And it is useful because it can be calculated. And it bounds from below the local unconditional constant of F. What is the local unconditional constant of F? This is, well, you take all factorizations of the identity on F. I'm talking about a finite dimensional Banach space. I don't do it in the general sense. And look at all factorizations of the identity on F through L. L is a space with an unconditional basis. I don't think I need to define unconditional basis constant of L.
But maybe gamma 1 and phi 1, you don't want to define?
Gamma 1 and gamma, I need to define them, yeah. Gamma 1 is the factorization of T through L1, just like I did through L infinity. And pi 1 is the one absolutely summing norm of T. Do I need to define this? What?
I don't know if you need, but suddenly more is, exactly.
Is there? So, for gamma 1, what you do is you factor. This is a finite dimensional Banach space. You look at the best factorization. And pi 1 of T is infimum over all constant C, so that sigma T of XI is smaller than or equal to C sup over all over the sigma plus minus XI taken over all plus minus signs and all XI. So it is the infimum of such a constant C. So here is the proof. I want to prove that theorem.
If you will use unconditional structure constant, it also should be defined. Unconditional basis is known. Unconditional structure, no.
But it is defined, isn't
okay,
it?
Okay, if you don't use it, you wrote it.
I wrote it, yeah.
So if you want to use it,
yeah. Yes, I'm going to prove something, so I will use it. GL2 of F is smaller than KU of F. I don't know if you want to see the proof, but what I'm trying to prove now is this theorem. The theorem was discovered also by not this in this sense. Keith Ball did it, he wanted to get a, but he did not prove that inequality. What he did is show that the zonoid ratio of F is bounded by GL2 of F. And actually, it is true that the product is. And so it strengthens the result. And It's equivalent to the zonoid ratio. The weak GL2, he did the weak GL2, which is actually equivalent to the zonoid ratio. Exactly, up to a constant, it's equivalent. So what I'm doing is I'm using the previous result. You remember the theorem about gamma infinity. It said that the external volume ratio, but I'm taking E to be ln 2. And so we have that inequality from the previous result I proved. But I put it for general E, but now I'm using the case when E is ln 2. But then this is easy to see. What is the external volume ratio of ln 2? This is exactly 2 to the power n, the cube, the volume of the cube, divided by the volume of the Euclidean ball. But you have the volume of the Euclidean ball inside, so you can simply erase it, and you just have the 2 to the power n, the nth root, the volume of the cube, nth root. So if you use that, you get that. You have that result. Now I say what is gamma infinity of T. You factor T through L infinity, but then you can factor T star through L1. Simply take the conjugate of T. And so it's the same. And we know that GL2 of F, that gamma 1 of T star is bounded by GL2 of F multiplied by pi 1 of T star. Now, it turns out that I should actually write GL2 of F star because that was the definition. But actually, GL2 of F and GL2 of F star are the same. And so we have that inequality. And now, I use Lewis' lemma. There is a T, a special operator T, such that pi 1 of T star, which appears here, is n divided by gamma infinity of T star minus 1. But where is T star minus 1 going? T star minus 1 goes from ln 2 to F star. And we have a theorem for that. What is the gamma infinity of a norm between two Banach spaces? And so I simply plug in this, and I get that pi 1 of T star is that. It's written there. And this is bounded by that, because you have n here, then appears here. And then you have the same thing. And now you simply plug it in for pi 1 of T star. But what you have here is the terminal T star minus 1 from below. So it appears here below. You bring it up here, and they cancel. The terminal of T star minus 1 cancel out. And the result is that... Trivial, there is nothing to it. It shows what we proved is that the zonoid ratio of F and F star is bounded by the volume of BF multiplied by the volume of BF star, GL2 of F. But now I use Santalo inequality. And so I get that n of bn2, the volume to the power 2 over n, is bounded by a constant. So this shows the GL2 inequality. So, and finally, of course, as I said, GL2 of F is bounded by the local unconditional structure of F. If you want to see the proof, I can show it. It's written. Maybe I'll leave it for later. So what it shows is the following. The product, you see, the product, where was it? It's the previous slide. Yes. You know, it will not work. I cannot do it. Okay, so here is a trivial result. ZR of F, zonoid ratio of F, multiplied by the zonoid ratio of F star is bounded by square root N, always. So one of them is bounded by N to the 1 over 4. One of them. Which one? We don't know. Of course, Bourguin's result, there is also n to the 1/4, but we multiplied by some log n factor.
No. If you put any analogy, lk times lk star is trivially less than square root of n. It's absolutely trivial. So, but what of them is square root of n? Everyone's n to the power 1
root of n.
Okay? Product. No, he put analogy with n to the power 1 over 4.
So one of them is smaller than...
If you talk about isotropic constant analogy, just I want to say that well, less than square root of n
yes.
is absolute reality.
But this follows also from this, because LK multiplied by LK star is bounded by this zonoid ratio. So this is the result of Ball that LK is bounded by the zonoid ratio.
Yeah.
And so it follows from this. Okay.
Johan, something, I don't know if you're going to speak about that, but you say that there are spaces in which the zonoid ratio is large?
There are spaces. And now, so because this is the theorem that I want to show now. Here is the theorem. And this is one of the main results in a paper by Jung and myself. This theorem. It says that the volume ratio, the standard volume ratio, is bounded by the zonoid ratio from above. But for a subspace of dimension n over 2, always, for every Banach space E. This is a deep result.
And so,
of course, if you take L infinity n, so as a corollary, immediate corollary, you get that. L and P contains a subspace E of half the dimension, such that the zonoid ratio of E from below, it's bounded by the volume ratio of L and P, which is n to the 1 over 2 minus 1 over P. The volume ratio is n to the 1 over 2 minus 1 over P. But from above, it's also bounded by the distance of E to L and P. So they're all equivalent. If you take P equal infinity, you get the result that... you get the result of Ball and by Figel-Johnson for L infinity. There is such a space with maximal zonoid ratio.
This is
a paper of 40 pages.
Yeah, but
it's the main result.
You cannot say one word.
I'm using a lot of ideal norms and volume formulas of LP spaces and all connections. This is a probability is used there also.
So it's
no, I mean it's not a standard. It's not something that can be shown.
Subspace of two sides of n over 2. Either it is random or two for two ellipsoids.
I will skip this.
And this is what Nicole asked you.
It is random.
Random.
Yeah. Yeah, it is random. Therefore, you cannot construct it.
Inside what structure it is random?
Well, it's difficult. I don't want to go into it now. It will I will never finish. Actually, you have a much stronger result. And this is this result. So, what I'm saying is that LN infinity has a lot of bad subspaces. In fact, you can think of all of them are bad, horrible. This is what the theorem says. You take any subspace of L infinity N. It can be almost the whole dimension. It can be actually equal to L infinity N. Then there is a subspace EM in E, any subspace, which is contained in E, and dimension is equal to M, where M is any number smaller than N, such that every subspace of F, every subspace F in EM of dimension K will have volume ratio, a big volume ratio from below. So it may be confusing to look at K, M, and N, but let me take the example. What?
Why you wrote E belong to N infinity N? Every subspace belongs to N infinity N.
Whatever is
N?
N?
Embedded N capital below.
Yeah, you take any subspace of L infinity N. Then it has a subspace.
Okay.
All of its finite dimensional subspaces are horrible.
So if it's very bad,
yes.
N capital below.
And this can be any proportion. So maybe it's easier to look at this. You take E to be L infinity N, and theta and phi are two numbers between 0 and 1. Then there is a subspace of L infinity N, of dimension theta N, so almost full dimension, such that every subspace of dimension phi N will have volume ratio, maximal volume ratio, square root N. So it has GL2. So it's horrible. It's a horrible space. Every subspace. So you can say all subspaces of L infinity N are horrible. So this is this result extends the previous one. There was existence theorem, but this says that it happens usually.
Well, no, it says that you can find a subspace.
There exists a subspace of almost full dimension.
Well, I mean, the full dimension so is the same as we always have the full dimension.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well,
this is,
okay.
This is also a probability statement, right?
Yeah.
So we find a subspace such that all of its further subspaces.
Further subspaces of almost full dimension also, because phi and theta can be close to one. Will be bad.
If you take a Gooskin subspace of an infinity, all of its subspaces.
So, of course, they have bad GL2 and they cannot be close to Hilbert spaces and so on. For LNP, you have a similar result. Okay, but it's maybe complicated, but let me just look, not at the, just that. Which is a similar result. It has maximal. If you take E to be LNP, for P bigger than 2, because for P smaller than 2, they are all zonoids. So you have the maximal order. So here is another result. So we were talking about the volume ratios of ELP, that is, you put quotients of LP inside the B of E, maximal quotients. Then they satisfy some inequalities, which are easy to obtain. But, and of course, I mean, they can be very bad. The volume ratio can be volume ratio ELQ can be different from volume ratio ELP when E is a finite dimensional Banach space. But when you take an infinite dimensional Banach space, then they are equivalent in a sense. What does it mean? So, if you take any infinite dimensional Banach space, then the following are equivalent. all the three conditions. The volume ratios of all n-dimensional Banach spaces is bounded by C1 n to the power alpha. And or for all n-dimensional Banach spaces, the zonoid ratio is bounded by the same thing. Or three. All n-dimensional Banach spaces, there is a delta n-dimensional subspace such that the volume ratio is bounded by n to the power alpha. All these are corollaries, but of course I don't want to prove them. So we talked about gamma p, which is the factorization through lp or l1. We can do it through lp in the same way. And then you can define fp of t more generally, doing such a factorization. And you have also something of similar formula as for the case p equal to infinity, exactly the same, which says that this theorem.
This is called pre-integral something.
Now, I mean, when p was infinity, there was no problem to do it. And I showed it. I mean, it was simply the volume of a zonotope. This was the main tool there, which we know to do. But for LP, to do the same thing, you can copy the same proof, you will run into problem unless you know how to evaluate the quotient of the n-dimension, the volume of the of a quotient of LP. So, I want to show what are the volume formulas for quotients of LP spaces, which you need in order to prove these inequalities. So, for you have a section of an LP ball, an n-dimensional section of an LP ball. It's okay, you can always write it like that. B. The volume formula for B is the following. You have functions fi, which define B. They are linearly independent functions in LP. P can be between 0 and infinity. Then the volume formula, then the volume of B to the power minus 1 over n is this n-fold integral of fi omega j to the power 1 over pn, up to a constant Cp, which can be bad if P is smaller than 1. But if P is bigger than 1, then we know to evaluate this exactly. So this is a theorem follows from this result. So this is a quotient of little lp. You see, you have points, arbitrary n points in Rn, a lot of them. And V is a map from Rm to Rn, defined by V of Ei is equal to Xi. Standard map. Then the volume of BMP prime, not BMP, but BMP prime, divided by the standard BNP prime ball, multiplied by this, the minimum of what this is, generally P is smaller than N, so it's the square root of P, is equivalent to this determinant. because you have the two-sided inequality, which is the same up to square root p. So that follows for p bigger than 1.
Can you leave it? Please?
What?
Can you leave it?
So you immediately, as a consequence, you get immediately a result which is strengthens Ball, Pajot, Barani, Furedi, Gluskin. And this is an immediate consequence of the quotient theorem. M is bigger than N. You have a sequence of points in Rn. I see it, but you don't. You have a sequence of points in Rn, and k is the convex hull of plus minus these points. Then there is a subset, I naught, of n points out of m. M can be anything. The points can be anywhere in space. There is a subset of n points, such that the volume of the whole thing is smaller than the cross polytope formed from I naught bound, multiplied by the square root of log 2m over n. So if the points are, for example, on the sphere, on the Euclidean sphere, all of them, then you get the result of Gluskin. From that. And the proof is immediate. This is the proof. I simply have to choose the number p that appears here in the correct way. This number p. All I do is I choose p to be square root of log of m. And I use the formula there.
It's intended that it is without square root. It's written p is equal to log n.
Yes. Yes, p is equal to log n. And then you evaluate what it comes up to. And so I'm simply using the following. I look at the convex hull of plus or minus this set k, which I call k here. And this is exactly the image of the L1 ball. But the L1 ball, the image of the L1 ball is contained in the image of the LP prime ball. P prime is bigger than 1. P is big, but P prime is still bigger than 1. And so you simply use the formula here, and you evaluate what is square root P and so on. And then you take the maximal determinant outside, again the determinant outside, and you get the result. It's a simple, very simple. I want to show another consequence of these results.
Yes, the key to infinity is obvious. Yes, just this formula. It's
equivalent, actually. For p equal infinity,
well, one in infinity. Yes.
The problem is if you take p equal to infinity, you get zero.
No,
so you don't have anything.
P equals 1 and 2. Yes, what was known. Yes, it is some kind of class.
For p equal to infinity, you know the volume. This is for p prime equal infinity. For p prime equal infinity, this is a zonotope.
Yes. So for p equal
2, you also know.
Two is
and actually, there is a quality. You know exactly what it is in both cases. But for general P, you have an inequality.
Actually, you have equivalence if P is not too large, because the left you have.
So, this is a result of Bourguin in 1985. He said that every n-dimensional Banach space with n a power of capital N contains a k-dimensional subspace which is isomorphic to L infinity K for K up bigger than square root N. And you can ask whether square root N is the best result. But this result is optimal.
This was connected with the dichotomy.
So the method of the proofs work to show that this square root n is optimal. In other words, one can prove the following. For every delta, every n-dimensional x contains a delta n-dimensional Banach space E, such that every k-dimensional subspace f of in E must satisfy this, where C delta is equal to this number. Every n-dimensional Banach space x. In particular, if you take x to be L infinity n, this is true.
So it depends on delta
Depends on delta, of course.
No, but the depends on delta is an important factor.
Yes. Now you can also get some in the same paper. You have the following. You can talk about you can talk about a big Banach space Z, which can be L infinity or LP of infinite dimension or finite dimension, it doesn't matter. And I want to look at subspaces. And I can define, and E is a given Banach space of dimension N. And I'm looking at all subspaces of S of Z means subspaces of Z. So here is an example, B of F, or this space. So this is a subspace. And I'm looking at all maps T, which take the subspace, n-dimensional subspaces T, which map that subspace, that unit ball in the subspace, inside B of E. And you can, and you want to maximize the volume inside, the volume of the image. So, what it says is that if you take, if you do it for LQ spaces, then you get the following theorem. So, if you look at all n-dimensional, at all subspaces in LP, but P and Q are between 1 and infinity, look at all subspaces of LP, then the volume ratio from subspaces of LQ is asymptotically equivalent to this. This is not terrible to prove. This is a little bit, this is more difficult, and it also looks strange. But this is the consequence. So as a result, it follows that the following distance formula. You look at all subspaces F in LP, P bigger than 2, less than infinity, and Q is V. Is between the between 2 and P. You look at the farthest subspace, and then you look at the closest one, the closest G inside to F. But F must be the farthest away from the closest inside, DFG. Then this is exactly this number.
How does it correspond to what, like? is it useful for Mark Rudolphson?
I don't know.
What?
Mark.
This gives you the C1 gives you a lower one for the
lower. For the well.
No, you're not enough.
You get. This is one result.
Is it a funny relation to?
Yeah. Ah. So, how much time do I have? I can minus 2. Can I run to minus 5?
Okay.
No?
Yeah,
you have to. Tell us. Tell us.
No. Yeah. 3 more.
I just wanted to say that that the hyperplane conjecture is follows from this, from the zonoid ratio. So this is the last result. I will skip some. This is a result due to Keith Ball. I have the proof inside, it's quite easy. So just look at the theorem here. If you have a bounded zonoid ratio of the dual space, then you have the hyperplane conjecture holds for the Banach space X. So Keith is not here, so he doesn't. Okay, so thank you.
Any more questions? Okay, the next topic is the three set. The cheese after.